Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, good morning. It's August 17th, 2008. And that makes this Solder Smoke 90. Very good. Here we're in the middle of holiday season in Italy. I mean, the deepest part of the August holidays. Friday was the national holiday known as Ferragosto. And basically, the country pretty much shuts down, certainly during this weekend. And in most cases, off into the next 2 weeks. And the Italians are very serious about all taking vacation together during this period. It's actually kind of a nice custom. So off they go to the beach. and many of us have chosen to stay in the city, to stay in Rome, because actually Rome gets very pleasant during this time of year. It's kind of strange. We in the States associate August with the as being the hottest month, but actually, the Romans told me, and it's turned out to be true, that June and July are actually a bit hotter here, and things start cooling off a little bit in late August, and that's proven to be the case. I'm sitting here in the shack with the window open. The air conditioner is not blasting away. And it's actually quite comfortable. So we're going to be in Rome. I've got to work. We'll be here for the 2 weeks of the holiday period, taking some short trips out of town. And then we'll probably take some some time off in early September, just before the kids head back to school. We did take a trip last weekend that was really nice, a beach trip from Rome, a little bit further than we normally go. We went down to a place called Circeo, which is kind of a little peninsula that sticks out into the Med, a bit southeast of Anzio, and really a beautiful place, really nice beaches. The Italians know how to do beaches very, very nicely, and they have all these little kind of resort clubs. You don't have to be a member. You can just show up and pay the fee for using them. But you get your beach chair all set up, the umbrellas all set up, everything's right there. They got a nice restaurant with good food right nearby. The beaches are clean, the sand is beautiful. You can see the island of Ponza shimmering off out there on the horizon. Not too much kind of schlepping around of beach stuff. So I recommend it, guys. It's it's really nice. So we had a great time down at Circeo, and if any Italians are listening now, I wish you all a good Ferragosto and a good vacation period. I hope you enjoy it. Let's see what else I got on the list here. Talking about vacation stuff, the kids sometimes come in and have lunch with me, we look around the neighborhood for places to go. And the other day, we for some reason had an urge for hamburgers, so we went into the Hard Rock Cafe. There's a Hard Rock Cafe very close to where I work, and in we went and sat down, and just as we were getting ready to order, up on the screen, you know, they have the rock and roll playing. They started playing this old song called My Sharona. And I said, I think Maria asked me, who sings this song, Daddy? And I realized it was by the rock group The Knack. So we're not the only ones to be using the term The Knack. More on that later. I've gotten some correspondence from our British cousins about the word The Knack. I'll tell you about that in a bit. But yeah, the rock group, The Knack. They don't appear to have the knack to me, guys. They had a few hits there. But I don't think it's The Knack in our sense of the term. Couple guys who do seem to have a variety of the knack. I don't know if you've seen this show, The Planet Mechanics. We have the Discovery Channel making its way to us kind of periodically via various satellite TV systems that we have here at the house. And the other day I caught an episode of The Planet Mechanics, these two British guys who go around doing kind of homebrew projects. They have a mobile workshop that looks very, very knackish, and their projects are all related to using technology, simple technology, homebrew technology that will help people meet their energy needs while protecting the environment. And I caught a couple of the episodes. They usually involve windmills or wave power or solar panels, and I liked it. So check it out. Check out The Planet Mechanics on the Discovery Channel. I liked it. It's I like a lot of these shows. We miss the what is it? Mythbusters. We used to watch Mythbusters all the time, and somehow Mythbusters doesn't make it to us here that often. They have this thing called Brainiac, and this is a. I'm sure many of our British listeners are cringing at this point, for good reason. I think Brainiac might have started out as a science show, but it's descended into really horrible levels of silliness. And now it mostly involves, as far as I can tell, putting things in the microwave oven that will explode, perhaps causing, they seem to blow up lots of mobile homes or caravans. And my kids were looking at it the other day, and they said, "Daddy, is this science?" And I said, no, it's not. So anyway, boo on the Brainiacs. Well, let me see. Looking along here at the list. The Hard Rock Cafe. Good week this week. We guess got a new issue of QST, and I'm pulling it out here. And I congratulations to the folks there in Newington, Connecticut, because they put together a really good issue. And I found a number of things here. I know I realize I may be behind the times here. It takes a while for these things to reach me. I know that you guys are reading the September issue, but I'm stuck back here in August. And really enjoyed this one. They had the article on Steve Weber's article, KD1 and JV, the 40-meter CW-SSB transmitter for the Homebrew Challenge. I really liked the rig, liked the design. Learned a lot reading about it, so thanks for that article, Steve. Let me just look at it here. They've got the great schematic and a good discussion of how and why he did various things. And also, I really liked the TR switching arrangement that Steve used. He used the chip to switch around the signals going into and out of the crystal filter. He used the 74HC4053 chip. A nice use of that. I would have been back in the Stone Age using relays, and I probably would have forgotten to put the cap and the diode across the relay coil, which would have destroyed devices all along the board. So Steve has done a real good job on that. Congratulations on winning the prize, and congratulations on the QST article. Let's see what else we have in here. Oh, there's an interesting article in there about using pneumatic switches for changing the frequency of dipole antennas. You know what I mean? Usually you'd put a trap out there. I've never had any luck with putting traps in the dipole. You know, what you want to do is you want to make it, you know, maybe a 40-meter antenna and also be able to use it on 20, so you need something to switch out the extra bit of the antenna at the end. Well, they've got an article in here. Let me give the author credit. Let me get to the index. Hold on. Here it is. A pneumatically switched multiband antenna by Gary Kath, N2OT, and Craig Bishop, WB2EPQ. Kind of a novel use of pneumatically controlled switches. I kind of liked it. Thought it was kind of a clever way to do things. Then there was this is one that really caught my attention, and I really like this article. Homebrew High Adventure 1955 Style, Out of Afghanistan, by Glenn Brown, and then 8G. and it's about a Foreign Service guy, and that's the line of work I'm in. His name is Eupetis, K3EC, and it talks about his adventures of that came about as a result of his assignment to Afghanistan in the mid-50s, and how he went up to Afghanistan and decided he wanted to homebrew some ham radio gear up there, and did a really amazing job building a really advanced and beautiful tube-type receiver up there in Afghanistan. I know what it's like to homebrew from remote locations, so I definitely appreciated the work of OMU Pettis, and thanks very much to Glenn Brown for a really nice article. And way in the back, I hope I can find this, in one of the Strays columns, they had a, oh man, I should have marked this thing, I'm probably not going to be able to find it now, but they had an article here about a guy who got, I think, worked all states with like 1 milliwatt. Here it is, a QRP record. This is on page 99. Bob Moody, K7IRK of Tillamook, Oregon, has submitted QSLs for worked all states QRP at 2.1 milliwatt. He wonders if this is the WAS QRP record. Quote, most of these contacts were made on 10 meters when the propagation was hot, he said, but the impossible states on 10 meters were filled in with a few contacts on other bands. It wouldn't surprise me for someone to complete worked all state QRP under 1 milliwatt when the propagation improves this sunspot cycle. Yeah, all right. So congratulations to Bob, and I'm sure he'd appreciate some feedback about whether he actually has a record there. 2.1 milliwatts sounds pretty good to me. I'm my 30 meter QRSS beacon is clicking away right now at a real QRO 20 milliwatts, almost 10 dB above above Bob's signal. So maybe I'll have to lower the power here before I be accused of being an ether buster or a watt hog. All right. So QST was really good. I've been adding stuff to the blog, to the Solder Smoke blog. It's at http://soldersmoke.blogspot.com. If you guys aren't looking at it, I think you'd enjoy it, and I think you should subscribe to it too, so you can get alerts when I put things up there, because sometimes I'll get lazy and some time will pass and I won't put anything on there, and then all of a sudden I'll get a burst of blog energy and I'll put a whole lot of stuff on there. So I've got some stuff up there now that I think you guys would really like, and in no particular order here because I don't remember the order that I put them up there, but the last one I put up was I think really nice. There's a really well-known and well-liked ham radio operator, K4HU, I think it's Harry Mills. One second, let me call up my own web page here, so I got to remember what I wrote. I'm calling up Solder Smoke News. The blog format is really easy to work with, so I'm having a lot of fun with it. Yeah, K4HU, Harry Mills. I got his picture up there. Harry just recently passed away at the age of 100. And the nice thing, well, I mean, you know, we're sorry that Harry has passed away, but he apparently remained very active and very happy on the ham bands all the way through, and was making regular contacts with friends on the bands right up till the end. So everybody really speaks very highly of Harry. And what happened is, back in 2001, National Public Radio did a story entitled Conrad's Garage, in which they described activities in the early 20s that led to the to the birth of commercial radio broadcasting in the United States, the station KDKA. And it all started out with somebody with the knack named Conrad, working in a garage in Pennsylvania. Westinghouse got interested in it, and that became KDKA. And Harry, K4HU, was a kid fooling around with homebrew crystal radios at the time. And was astonished to hear some of the first phone broadcasts from what would later become KDKA. In their very pleasant National Public Radio kind of style, All Things Considered did a report on this. I have it up on the I have links to it up on the Solder Smoke blog, so check it out. I really think you'll enjoy listening to this one. It's very, very similar to the story they also ran on Radio Row in New York City. I like this one even better, and they have interviews with Harry, and he talks about his love for ham radio and his lifelong addiction to it. So good stuff, and be sure to check that one out. Also on the blog, we have lots of stuff about, some of you guys are probably going to get sick of this now, all this talk about QRSS and 30 meters, but I got to tell you, there's some fascinating things happening there. And Johan, ON5EX, who's the owner and operator, one of the best grabbers. These are the online receive systems for 30 meter or other band for QRSS signals. He recently put a very distinctive QRSS signal on the bands, and what it does is it paints across the screens. You know, we receive these signals on the computer screen, and Johan has very cleverly come up with a way of putting a little bicycle on the screen. So while my pathetic little beacon just puts dots and dashes along the screen, Johan is riding a bicycle across the screen, riding a bicycle across 10140010 hertz. The bicycle's kind of cool because it changes direction. One way it's riding to the left, and the next few seconds later it's riding to the right. Somebody wrote in and said that's 0.1 cycles per second. Good one. I have pictures of it up on the Blogspot page. You got to check it out. It's really pretty neat. I was astonished because I at first I didn't know who was transmitting these things, who was doing it. Then I found out it was Johan, and then I realized over lunch yesterday. I said, "Wait a second, I'm looking at his receive system. How could he be transmitting these things and receiving at the same time?" And then I took a closer look at his grabber, and whenever he has the bicycle on, there's a period there where the grabber shuts down for 20 or 30 seconds, for the 20 or 30 seconds that it takes to transmit the bicycle. And then he goes back into receive mode. So that's how he does it. I thought it's all very clever. Thanks a lot, Johan, and you guys should check that out. Occasionally we delve into astronomy here, and I came across a picture, an amazing picture, one of the most amazing astronomical photographs I've seen in a long time. It's a picture of Saturn, but taken from the other side of Saturn, because the Cassini probe, which was launched shortly before Billy was born, more than 10 years ago, is now exploring the moons of Saturn. This thing is enormous. It's about the size of a school bus. And it's out there doing a fantastic job, powered by plutonium, out there taking these amazing pictures of Saturn and Saturn's moons. And this shot that I have up on the blog is a picture of Saturn in eclipse. In other words, the sun, Saturn is completely between the spacecraft and the sun. So you're seeing Saturn in eclipse, and the sun is illuminating the rings, and light from the rings is illuminating the backside of Saturn. So it's a really stunningly beautiful picture, but there's an extra prize in there. You got to click on the picture when you see it on the screen, because it's kind of small for the blog page. If you click on it, it goes to full screen. And if you look between the rings, up there at about the 10 o'clock position, you'll see a little white dot. And that's us. That's the Earth. Just amazing, amazing picture. Congratulations to the guys at NASA and JPL who came up with that stuff. Let's see what else I have here. More on the bicycle riding. Oh, by the way, whenever I put these articles about bicycle riding, on the webpage, and whenever I put anything about traveling in Italy, the Google ad machine gets confused, and the advertisements all start shifting over. So now you'll see advertisements there for bicycle trips in Italy. We've got the Frapper page up. The Frapper page is kind of a different map system. A cluster map is quite good. Cluster map shows where all of our readers are. Frapper is a similar setup. It allows people to put in little information about themselves, and it gives more precise information about their location. It points to the specific town that somebody, I'm just looking right now, Kaj, OH6EH is there, Eldon, WA0OUW, John, K7JM in Jefferson City, Montana. Anyway, you'll see it. If you want to get information about yourself on there, it's real easy to just plug in some info about where you are. There's Vince, N9VN. Plug in some information, location information about yourself. Some guys are putting little notes about what they're working on. It's a lot of fun. You could even put a picture up there of yourself if you want to, if you don't think it would scare everybody. Check out the Frapper portion of it. I had my doubts in the beginning, but I think it's kind of fun. Got a great message from David VK6DI out there in the western part of Australia. David is one of the real gurus of QRSS, and he's given us some really nice notes on bandwidth and modulation and the use of the grabber, the use of the software, the Argo and Spectran software, how it affects bandwidth, how best to use it, which software is best for beginners. So thanks very much, David, for all that, and you'll see that on the Blogspot page. Let's see, further down. What else do we have here? And one thing that's interesting that's going on, and there's been a lot of discussion on QRSS, on QRPL, about the relative merits of loops versus other antennas, small loops, and this is a long time controversy in ham radio, whether these small loops, whether the isotrons and the small loops are effective antennas. There's some hams up in northern Italy who are doing experiments on this using QRSS systems. What they have is they have two transmitters, each putting out about 1 watt, going to two separate antennas. One of them is a vertical with a good radial system, full-size vertical with a good radial system, and the other is what they call a CFA loop. It looks like a tiny little loop up on top of the mast there with a capacitor and a coil to get the thing tuned. Both transmitters are on the air a few hertz, just I think 5 or 10 hertz away from each other, transmitting QRSS. Two separate transmitters, two separate antennas, but keyed simultaneously. So when they appear on QRSS screens, you see two different lines. At 1 watt, they're really quite strong, and some guys have been, I think, commenting that they might be a little bit too QRO for the QRSS system, but there they are. They're plugging away at 1 watt. And it's interesting because normally, from close in, like I am, they you can't see too much of a difference in signal strength. But I was recently looking at David's receiver down there in West Australia, and I noticed that these stereo signals were coming in, and the lower signal, the signal from the vertical, was noticeably stronger than the loop. I mean, it's amazing that the little loop is, it's amazing that either signal is making it all the way down to Australia, and then I'm watching it live on the net, but anyway, you could see the difference there, and I thought it might be of interest to guys who are arguing about the relative merits of the two kinds of antennas. So let's see. That's on the blog page also. A little bit of silliness. We've got Herman Munster. Somebody sent in a clip. Herman Munster getting his ham license and speaking to Italy. He has a contact with Italy. Herman apparently hadn't been informed of the FCC rules
prohibiting the transmission of music on the amateur radio bands, and he took to singing, although I think he might still be in compliance with regulations, because I don't think anybody would consider what he was doing music. But he was singing a song about his mother's arms, and a ham from Italy came back and gave him what we refer to in the States as the Bronx cheer. Now, I want to point out there's some cultural inaccuracies in here. I just can't imagine an Italian radio amateur reacting that harshly, especially to a song about in which poor Herman was singing about his dear old mom. I just don't think it would happen that way. The Italian hams are usually quite courteous, and I don't think they'd react that way to a song that way. Anyway, it's kind of fun. We've pretty much determined that Herman does not have the knack. There's some disagreement here. I think Herman. this was a good one. I commented on the blog that Herman appears to me not to have the knack, and that Herman is an appliance operator. And sharp as attacks, somebody immediately came back and posted a comment saying that Herman Munster is not an appliance operator. He is an appliance. All right. So anyway, hopefully Herman is no longer on the air. He seemed to have a tube-type gizmo there of some sort, but I don't think he's got the knack, guys. So, well, we'll have to work on Herman. One other thing there. I posted this last week. I try whenever when we're on an off week from Solder Smoke, when we don't have, you know, I've been putting out Solder Smoke now every 2 weeks, and on those weekends when I don't, I'm not going to make another episode. I realize that some of you guys might be feeling a need for something to listen to on the MP3 players. So I put a clip there. On. I think I might have mentioned this before. We're getting to the point where I might start repeating myself here. Bear with me. But, you know, in Australia, they have these, they have the tradition of full duplex, 160 meter, and then VHF conversations. It's been going on since the 70s, and these guys get on there and they have these really long round tables and they discuss all kinds of things. Sounds like a real lot of fun. And a lot of them are on the web, and you can listen to them. I found one that I found particularly interesting, and it was a bunch of Australian hams on AM talking technical stuff. It sounded sort of like a 1944 Australian version of Solder Smoke, and it's really a lot of fun. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I hope our Australian listeners and our British listeners will tell me if I'm wrong here, but to me, the 1944 Australian accent sounds a lot more British than the way Australians sound today. Am I right? Have you guys drifted away in terms of speech patterns? And do those guys in 1944 sound a whole lot more British? Could this have been the influence of the war? And I don't know. But I thought that was kind of... They didn't sound particularly distinctively Australian to me. They sounded more like closer to the British accent. I hope I'm not touching any raw nerves here, but that's the way it sounded. The tech talk was interesting, and it sounded very, very familiar, very, very similar to the kind of conversations that we all have when we get on there and start talking about tech stuff these days. Let's see. A couple other things I wanted to mention. Oh, this might be an appropriate moment. Speaking of conversations from a long time ago. A couple of years ago, Matt, KC8COM, sent me, out of the blue, a recording that really caught my attention. I think in an earlier issue of Solder Smoke, when we were talking about Gene Shepard, K2ORS, a man of substance, as he put it. I mentioned that I at one point had actually spoken to Gene Shepard, and it was on the WMCA AM broadcast radio station in New York City. And somehow Matt, I guess, went to the archives and found it, and he found the clip. and he sent it to me. And I'm going to present it to you guys right now. This is really kind of weird. This is like the Wayback Machine, you know. The year is 1976. I was 18 years old. Gene Shepherd was on the WMCA radio station talking to Candy Jones and Long John Nebel. You New Yorkers out there will know what I'm talking about. These folks were the these folks were into talk radio before talk radio became so kind of harsh and abrasive. It was much nicer back then. And they would get on and they would talk to everybody and have these long conversations. And one night they had Shepherd on. There he was. And I called in and I talked to Shepherd. And you'll hear me in there. You probably are not going to recognize my voice because talking about shifting accents, when I listen to my voice as an 18-year-old, now it sounds to me very, 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 very New York. My New York accent is much more distinct in this recording. I haven't taken any lessons or deliberately tried to change anything, but I guess it's just the result of being away for 30 years. And it's known in the certainly in the U.S. military that people's accents do change. And after you've been in the Army for a while, I guess the same thing applies to the Foreign Service. You end up starting to speak a kind of a mishmash of American accents, kind of a Heinz 57 variety varieties of accents there. So you'll hear this very New York kind of guy talking to Shepherd. I use my my call sign, WB2QHL, my general class call sign from way back when. And I had a really nice conversation with Shepherd there. I think he was very, very kind, very gracious. And I'm particularly pleased that he said 7-3 to me over WMCA. So I'll put it on now. Hope you guys like it. And let's see if we can get it going here.
Good morning. You're live in WMCA.
Hello, Shepherd?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, this is WB2QHL, and I just wanted to say thanks, because from listening to your program, I got started in ham radio.
Okay.
You may curse me, you know, when you start to look at what you put into it after a while, but thanks for calling. What band do you work?
I work 40 side bands a lot.
Oh, I'm on 40 occasionally. I work a lot of 20 CW.
20 CW, maybe I'll get you on the air sometime.
Okay, hang in, man.
Okay.
73s.
Thank you. Good morning.
All right, good. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Matt, for sending that in. And well, Shepherd's gone, but I thank him, too, for giving me the chance to talk to him. I know I've been getting a lot of good comments on Shepherd. People really like the Gene Shepherd recordings. It seemed, like I said, it seems to have particularly resonated with our British cousins who may not have known about him before. I'll try to dig up some more recordings. Lots of them are now online, and it just becomes a matter of finding those that are most directly related to the NAC and ham radio. Some of you guys I know don't like it too much. It is a bit of an acquired taste. It is a bit intensely New York and a bit kind of beatnik. And some of the phrases that Shepherd uses are really kind of funny. He talks about how when 40 meters was really open that night and we were having a wild scene, man. Occasionally, he'll describe something as being particularly groovy. So Shep was a bit of a beatnik. I guess that was kind of a pre-hippie. And lived in the village and in New York City and everything. So it might not be for everybody, but so a lot of folks have been saying that they have really enjoyed it. Let's see, a couple things I wanted to mention. I've felt the urge to melt solder as the temperature has dropped here in Rome a little bit. I've gotten back to the workbench and I'm working on a rig. It's not a QRSS beacon, don't worry. It's a much more traditional thing. It's what I call my kick panel rig. It's a double sideband transmitter, soon to be transceiver. I'm building it. I built most of this back in London, and I built it as a 40-meter double sideband rig in London. And never really used it too much because I didn't have a decent antenna up. I'm reconfiguring it now. I've changed the oscillator. It's now oscillating on 80 meters. And I'm going to build it so it'll put out about 5 watts double sideband on 80 meters. It's what I refer to as a kick panel rig, because the metal cabinet that surrounds it is I bought it at a hardware store on Fulham Road in London, and it's an aluminum kick panel. It's the panel that you put at the bottom of a door, like in a movie theater or in a restaurant where people use the door a lot, and you don't want the foots at the bottom to the kicking at the bottom to destroy the wood of the door. And I just bent this around. The base of it is a cooking chopping board that I bought at a hardware store in Windsor, outside London, near Windsor Castle. And I had some real frustrations with it, so the kick panel name is very, very appropriate. I almost kicked it a few times. But I'm working on that now very happily, and got the soldering iron fired up right now. So I'm sure some of you guys will be pleased that I'm moving back into more traditional ham radio construction. I've also been looking at some old, not old books, but some books that I haven't looked at a while back. And let me grab one of them here. Let's see. All right, I found it. It's time for a solder smoke book review. I might have done this one before, but it's so good I'll do it again if I did. The Science of Radio by Paul J. Nahin. I hope I'm pronouncing Paul's name right. N-A-H-I-N, Nahin. Nahin. Of the University of New Hampshire in Durham, published by the American Institute of Physics in Woodbury, New York, published in 1996, dedicated to Heaviside and Maxwell, my two scholarly, affectionate felines who insisted on giving their bottom line approval to this book by sitting on each page as I wrote it. Paul is a real serious professor of electrical engineering. And he has written a book. I think it's an amazing book. It's fantastic. He's combined his love for radio and radio circuitry with his professional expertise as a very mathematically oriented professor of electrical engineering. He talks about the shortcomings of many of the EE programs, but talks about how he describes it as sort of a top-down approach that would allow students of radio to get the big picture and understand how all the bits of theory and math that they're studying and working on fit into the construction of one device. And what the device that he chooses is an old tube type superheterodyne broadcast band receiver, and he gets into all the discussions of all the various bits of electromagnetic wizardry that are involved in this, the antenna, the mixers, how the mixers work. It's filled with radio lore and old circuitry, new circuitry, the discussion of the science, the math, the history of radio. There's wonderful cartoons in there, the Fourier functions, all the calculus, but it's all presented in a very, very digestible and pleasant way. I really enjoy the book. I can't say I understand all of it, but I'm working on it. It gives you something to work on. And so there it is. That's this week's book review. I'll try to put a link to it up on the Blogspot page so that it'll be easy for you guys to find it. But a great book, and I recommend it. And that's Solder Smoke's Book of the Week. Thanks, Paul. Let's see. What else? Oh, we've also been running what I've been kind of jokingly referring to as advertisements. The advertisement this week is for another very fine business parts supplier. Last time we talked about Dan Small Parts. Dan, I notice, one of our listeners, Seth, has written in and said Dan has opened up an eBay store. Check that out. Very good. It makes it easier to find all the very fine business products that Dan has. And there's an eBay store out there. So do a search on eBay for Dan's Electronic Parts or something like that. You'll find it. But good luck to Dan with that. Another supplier who's got a great collection of components of interest to us It's online. It's called kitsandparts.com, and it's put together by Diz, W-A-D-I-Z. And I've got links to it on the Solder Smoke Blogspot page. You'll find it right there. I was really impressed. He's got some exactly the kind of components that that we really need. So thanks for Diz. Thanks to Diz for putting that out. Let's see what else. Kick panel rig. I think I'm going through the list. Let's see. A couple of comments I wanted to make. You'll recall a while back I had computer problems. And I thought that there was some sort of bad hardware problems with my E-Machines computer. Well, we've apparently got a fix. Ladies and gentlemen, Maria arrives. Say hello, Maria.
Hello.
There she is. She's kind of sleepy. Anyway, I sort of got the computer fixed. Somebody at work gave me a Linux disk, and I've converted the thing into a Linux machine. And I had to fool around with the video card settings. And once I got those set to an acceptable level, everything started running fine. So I don't think it's a hardware problem. And now my problem is I want to convert the thing back into an XP machine. So I need an XP disk. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to rip off Microsoft. I actually bought the thing, and then there was a malfunction, and I have to replace it. And when I got it, I guess this is part of being a cheapo E-Machines. They didn't send you the disk. So I'm going to have to work with E-Machines to try to get them to send me the replacement software, because we do want to convert this thing back. As much as we love Linux, and I don't want to offend anybody, I'm sure you guys are, I know everybody's really excited about it, but it might be a little bit it might require too much of a computer knack for me to use it really effectively. So I'm going back to XP. I know. But anyway, I'm looking for a disk there so I can convert this thing back to its original configuration as an XP machine. It's particularly important for the kids because they use it, and there's lots of things that they somehow can't do with Linux. My frequency counter, guys, is still dead. Dead as a doornail. And I must say, I'm kind of disappointed because I was really hoping that with a group like this, at least one of you would send me an email saying, oh, all you need to do is change R32 or turn it off and turn it on or short out pin 6 or something like that. Something simple, something easy so that I can get this thing back. I like the glowing numerals. I like to see them clicking away there. It gives the shack more of a kind of a serious technological appearance. So help me out here, guys. Tell me how I can fix this thing. Hold on. Let me tell you what it is. It's a 6,000 frequency counter from Global Specialties Corporation. Anyway. That's what we're trying to fix. So if anybody has any ideas, please let me know. Maria's coming over. She's going to fire up the Linux machine and play Mini Clips computer games. All right. All right. What else we got here? I talked about the Frapper map. Oh, here, this is interesting. On the cluster map for the blog page, I keep track of where the red dots are, and now we've got an interesting red dot east of Madagascar, out there in the Indian Ocean. This is an interesting one. Who is this red dot? It's either, I think it's either Reunion Island or the Maldives out there. If anybody knows who that is, let me know, because we do keep track of listeners and readers in the more exotic locations, and this one's definitely in that category. All right, that's most of the list there. Of course, there's one thing that remains, and that is...
It's time for...
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
That's awesome.
Indeed.
Yeah, Solder Smoke Mailbag. Lots and lots of mail. We have our one of our regular listeners, our man in Tokyo, Jonathan. Jonathan San is on vacation with the wife and kid, and they're in Vietnam. I mean, wow, those of us who were born in the International Geophysical Year, IGY, and I know many of you out there are in that category, it still kind of is kind of shocking to say that so-and-so is on vacation in Vietnam, but there he is. It looks like he's having a great time. He sent some pictures along. He's trying to get a license. I'm sure he's back in Tokyo by now. I hope he had luck. I hope he was able to get on the air, but he was dealing with the kind of some difficult bureaucratic barriers there. He had with him a little, I think it's the ATS-3, a little rig in the Altoids tin. I wanted to put it on the air. I hope you had luck there, Jonathan. Let us know, and let us know how the trip went. That sounded really interesting. Thanks for the email. I think it's his message is posted on the blogspot.com page. I think you can find it there on the blog. Check it out. Jerry Feltz, our man in South Dakota, has been inspired by solder smoke and has gone out and bought himself a Drake receiver. Not a 2B. He got a 2A. And I'm thinking that there are some advantages to 2A. I mean, I think the 2B is the max, the top of the line. But when I looked at the technical characteristics of the 2A, I found some features there that I kind of liked. First of all, the 2A, it doesn't get as the filtering, and it isn't as narrow and selective as the 2B. The 2B will take you down to 500 cycles, whereas I think the 2A only goes down to about 2.6 kilohertz. But the 2A has a setting on it of 4.8, a bandwidth of 4.8 kilocycles. And I find that very attractive because one of the few complaints that I have about the Drake 2B is that it's a little bit too narrow for easy listening on AM. Congratulations, Jerry. Jerry's now looking for a Q multiplier to go along with this thing because, of course, if you have the Drake receiver, you want to Q multiply. And so he's looking at Q multipliers on eBay, and I'm sure he's going to find one soon. One thing I forgot to mention last week, Michael, Alpha Alpha 1 Tango Juliet, the poet laureate of QRP, our man in Vermont, has written in, and he told me that back when I was in my early days of QRSS, when I was transmitting very kind of chirpy QRSS CW, people commented that it was it looked like Italian tears. And Michael found an earlier use of these of this term, Finnish tears. Apparently, there was a rig out there that produced CW with similar characteristics. It was from Finland. I think it was used by some of the undercover services during the war. So this use of the term tears for kind of chirpy CW does not originate here at. In Rome. Somebody else was doing that. Thanks, Michael, for sending that in. There have been some continuing comments about the audio quality here. Apparently, the little drain pipe adapter to the microphone here has worked, and it has taken care of the popping pop, 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 pop sound. But apparently, I'm still causing people to cringe with my sibilance. The S's. And Keith, KB1DRK, wrote in that I should use a plug-in that might work with that Audacity called Spitfish. Man, Spitfish. I don't know. You know, in Dilbert, they're always talking bad about the marketing guys. I think whoever came up with the software needs some help from the marketing guys. Spitfish, I haven't given it a try, and I think it's probably because I just don't like the name. Anyway, I'm hoping that maybe by just taking off some of the higher audio frequencies when I do the equalization processing on this thing, I might be able to take care of the S's. And I'll tell you what I'll do. On the first 3 or 4 minutes of this program this week, I will use kind of a low-pass filter on the equalizer to knock down some of the frequencies at the higher end, and let's see if that does anything about the sibilant S's. Frank, SM5QU, writes in about last week we were talking about Apollo 11, And he talks about the Apollo 11 backpack radios. They were all built by a ham, Jack Yanisov, KN2KEF. They were running 5 watts AM on 296 and 259 megahertz. Fine business, Jack. And Frank, thanks for letting us know about that. We got another comment on Apollo. I'll tell you about that in a minute. Glenn, AC7 Zulu Nancy, reports that another ham, WB8LZG, Greg, has a kind of troublesome, worrisome, bothersome affliction related to the knack, and it's known as aerolitis. Yes, aerolitis. I don't have to describe it. You know what I'm talking about. Seth, W8FG, who alerted us to the to Dan moving into to eBay territory. Seth writes in and he reports that at a ham fest. I mean, this is a good summertime ham fest story. He apparently looked under the bench there and found at his feet a mint condition. I'm talking mint, pristine, 1977 edition of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur. Not a mark on it. Being sold, brace yourself, guys, $1 American. One. Sold. Seth has it. And is the proud owner of SSDRA. So fine business. Those things are out there at the in the Hamfest circuits, guys. And if you get a hold of a few of them, it might take care of the kids' college education. The way they're appreciating, like we said, we don't actually recommend that you sell your stocks and bonds and buy old copies of SSDRA. But well, some people are thinking about it. Herman Munster. Not an appliance operator, an appliance. Thanks for that. Dave, W8NF, writes to us from Beaverton, Oregon. Beaverton, Oregon must be a real... This has got to be one of the best places to be from if you're a home brewer. I mean, so many of the real heroes of home brew are now in and around the Beaverton, Oregon area. And Dave is fortunate enough to be among them there. He writes in with a couple of things. First, he alerts us to an electronic home brewing movement that's out there. It's called Dorkbot. You guys heard about this? Dorkbot, and if you just Google it, you'll learn more. It's about a bunch of guys and gals, I suppose, who are out there doing creative things with electricity or doing weird things with electricity. So at first it sounds like, hey, that's us. I don't really think so. I took a close look at it, and I'm not setting myself up as the final authority on this. It's not for me to say who has the knack and who doesn't. I can just give you my opinion. I think I have to turn it over to the committee, the Solder Smoke Knack Committee, to determine whether the folks at Dorkbot actually have the knack. I say they don't. This is way too artsy. It's all about, you know, funny-looking flashing lights, and it's sort of similar to what they do there on the Maker blog, where they take old electronic devices and turn them into musical instruments. It's just way too artsy for us, I say. So, Dave, thanks for alerting us to that. I think they some of them may have symptoms of the knack, but I don't think they actually have the dread disease. Dave also mentioned something interesting. We've talked quite a bit about how much homebrewing is going on in China, or how much solder smoke listening is going on in China. I guess the Olympics has turned a lot of attention to that country. And Dave said that when he's been over there, he has asked around about ham radio and home brewing. And at one point, he was told that for electronic home brewing in China requires some sort of a license. We're not sure whether they were referring to a standard ham license to build ham gear, or whether you need some sort of license to do any kind of electronic home brewing in China. If anybody knows about this, let us know. It's a real interesting topic, and because certainly we have a lot of potential NAC victims in that country, and it's always of interest to us to reach out to them. I notice on cluster map we are getting a few more dots there in China and a few more in Russia too. It's always nice to know where the home brewing is taking place, and you know, I just wonder why we don't hear more about it from China. This licensing issue might be part of it. So if anybody knows about this, let us know. Here's an important message. Our friend Steve, G0 Fox Uniform Whiskey, G0FUW, will be doing a talk on QRP construction at the Basingstoke Amateur Radio Club. That's the Basingstoke Amateur Radio Club in the United Kingdom on the 1st of September. Any of you who are in the area, I'm sure you'll really enjoy it. Pass the word, and Steve is going to give a very nice talk there on the 1st of September in Basingstoke. Chris, M0JRQ, sent in an interesting message following up on my comments regarding the English language as it's used on opposite sides of the Atlantic. And I mentioned knackered and how one or two of our British cousins have occasionally said that a person with the knack is knackered. And Chris explains that the use of the term knackered in England, I had it as sort of tired or worn out. Well, Chris explains it's a bit beyond that, guys. It comes from the knacker's yard, and this is where old horses who were too old to work anymore, were sent. But they weren't sent there for retirement. It was a very short retirement. They were sent there to be killed and rendered. I think rendered into glue. This is what we used to call the glue factory. In the States, we used to say, send them off to the glue factory. I think that's what the knacker's yard was. So when our British cousins say knackered, they mean so tired that you're going to be sent off to be turned into glue or something like that. So, yeah, that's not what we're talking about when we say somebody has the knack. I think we need to make the distinction here. Now, we've got several uses of the term. You know, we've got the My Sharona thing, and now we've got knackered and the knack. I think we all just need to be clear that we're talking about the knack in the Dilbert sense of the word. Dilbert's knack. You guys know what I'm talking about. We've got it. Deal with it. Chris also mentions that, and this is interesting, that they had a very fine business visit by Colonel Buzz Aldrin of the Apollo 11 crew. Apollo 11 seems to be a theme here. We just recently passed the anniversary, and he said that Buzz Aldrin came by, I guess, to a radio club meeting and gave them a talk and had some really great stories. I recently read a book out of the UK, and I recommend it, called Moonshot, or I got to get it. I think it's Moonshot, and it's about following up on the guys who actually walked on the moon. There were 12. There's 9 still living, 9 moonwalkers, and the British author went and tracked down all 9 of them and found out what they're up to now. And almost all of them come across very, very favorably, really great guys. And Buzz Aldrin was certainly in that category. you really like the chapter on Buzz Aldrin. I recommend it. Next episode, I'll give you more information on this book. But it's great. And Chris, I'm glad you got to meet Buzz Aldrin. Great guy, great explorer. All right. I think that brings us to the end. We just passed the 1 hour mark, guys. It's been a long one. Hope everybody's having a great summer, and hope everybody enjoys the final weeks of the vacation, and we'll all be heading back to shacks and rigs and soldering irons as September rolls around. 7-3 from Rome.